This is Audible.
Blackstone Publishing presents Pacific Rim Uprising, the official movie novelization by Alex Irvine. This book is read by Jeffrey Kafer. To Haruo Nakajima, the man in the Godzilla suit. 1. Editorial. Thanks, PBDC, and so long. Look, the breach has been closed for 10 years. If the kaiju were coming back, they would already have done it. You think they're not spoiling for a chance to get back at us after we dropped a nuke straight through the breach into their world, dimension, whatever? It's not going to happen. We've got a Pan-Pacific Defense Corps that stands guard against a threat that doesn't exist. There are how many Shatter Domes, how many Jaegers, how many Rangers and support staff? How much does all that cost? Shouldn't we be spending that money to rebuild everything that was destroyed during the war? When I fly into Los Angeles now, all I can see from Long Beach all the way up to Santa Monica is ruins. 10 years later. Europe was rebuilt sooner than that after World War II. Why, you ask? Because everybody knew the war was over. They put their money into rebuilding. They didn't waste it on more armies, more bases. No, they got on with their lives. We're not doing that. We're still staring out at the Pacific Ocean thinking it's full of monsters, and it's not. It's time to move on. It's time to demobilize the Pan-Pacific Defense Corps, mothball the Jaegers, shutter the Shatter Domes, and get on with the 21st century. The Pan-Pacific Defense Corps scrapyard in Santa Monica, California, spread over hundreds of acres that had once been prime beachfront. During the course of the Kaiju War, much of Santa Monica had been destroyed, and fallen Jaegers from up and down the West Coast now lay behind barbed wire. Around the scrapyard, what had once been one of the Los Angeles area's most beautiful cities, was now a ruin. Those who could get out were long since gone, and only the desperate remained. Jake Pentecost wasn't exactly desperate, but he was in a bit of a bind. He'd gotten on the wrong side of one of the local crime bosses, by the name of Sonny, and now he had to buy his way out of the problem by finding Sonny some high-quality salvage that Sonny could move on the local black market. Ordinarily, Jake would have steered clear of burglaring a PPDC facility. The penalties were pretty stiff. But he knew the area around this Jaeger graveyard well enough to figure he could skip out before any trouble arose. Even so, it was risky, and Jake wouldn't have been here if Sonny hadn't made it clear that the alternative involved lots of pain and maybe death. Well, definitely death. He led Sonny and Sonny's goons up to a part of the electrified fence surrounding the yard and pointed to the spot they should cut through. The goons were quick about it. This clearly wasn't the first time they'd cut a fence. And a minute later, Jake stepped through a nice big hole right next to a no trespassing sign that also bore the logo of the PPDC. Seeing it gave Jake a little spike of regret. He'd been a Jaeger pilot once. But that was the past. He couldn't do anything about it. Just like he couldn't do anything about all the other bullshit that came along with being the son of Stacker Pentecost. When your father died saving the world, there was no way to live up to that. Jake had long since quit trying. He turned himself into a pretty good, well, some people would call him a thief. He thought of himself as more of a salvage expert. It was a good life if it didn't get you killed. In this world, you had to hustle. The coastal cities, most of them, were still relief zones, filled with people just trying to get by, rubbing up against kaiju-worshipping cults that went around bemoaning the closure of the breach like it was the crucifixion. Then you had your homegrown gangsters doing what gangsters always did. Only now they had another sideline and cobbling together homegrown junk Jaegers from salvaged parts. Anyone with money had moved inland, getting away from the chaos and the possibility that another breach would open up and the kaiju war would start all over again. But their fear was his opportunity, because they left behind empty mansions like the one Jake squatted in up in Malibu. He also had a little bit of experience of Jaegers, which meant he had a better nose for where to find Jaeger tech than the average person. That put him in a pretty good spot, usually. He had gotten a reputation for delivering the goods and then... Okay, being honest here, he'd let it go to his head and he'd started bending the rules a little, ignoring well-established informal boundaries between different gang lords. Getting your hands on good bits of Jaeger tech was usually worth the risk, since a good score could set you up for a year. But every once in a while it blew up in your face. which was why Jake was in Santa Monica instead of back in Malibu where he belonged. Once they were inside the yard, Jake got out a beat-up old plasma tracker. It detected the energy signatures of plasma components even through a Jaeger's heavy shielding. Indispensable equipment for the ambitious salvage expert. As he was turning it on, Sonny started to walk ahead. Jake caught him and pulled him back behind the mangled remains of a Mark II Jaeger. When he was a little kid, he'd known them all by sight, and talked about them the way kids of a previous generation had known all the details about their favorite Pokemon or baseball players. Just as Jake yanked Sonny back, a searchlight swept over the spot where he'd just been. The BBDC patrolled the yard, but their timing never varied. Jake had done his research. Sonny glared at him, but he could hardly be mad that Jake had just saved the operation and kept them all out of jail. Jake led them around the first scrapped Jaeger, keeping an eye on the plasma tracker. It emitted a soft ping as they neared another Jaeger. This one wasn't quite as messed up as the first, but it was missing one arm and its head was shattered. Jake recognized it, of course. Romeo Blue, the only tripedal Jaeger ever put into service. 3 kaiju kills, all in partnership with Gypsy Danger. Destroyed by Insidia in Panama City 2020, with the loss of both pilots. Before that, Jake remembered seeing the parade after Romeo Blue had killed the kaiju Tacubus back in the early years after the opening of the breach. It was huge, lumbering, slow, but seemingly invincible. Seemingly. To a little kid whose father was already a hero after Tokyo. But now Jake was all grown up. "This one," he said. Sonny and his men followed Jake through a hatch and into the Jaeger's immense interior. Other than Jake, none of them had ever been inside a Jaeger before, and they eyed the surroundings with odd expressions. "You sure it's here?" Sonny asked. Jake found the access door he was looking for. On the other side of it would be Romeo Blue's plasma chamber, where the Jaeger's power core and associated hardware would have been collected and shielded. The door was jammed shut, but the control panel next to it would have an override. Jake got his fingers into the seam at the edge of the panel and wrenched it open. "Power core's a strip before Jaegers get decommissioned," he said as he felt around inside the panel. "But sometimes they miss the tertiary plasma capacitors. Hell of a score on the black market if this one's still holding the charge." "You'd better hope so," Sonny said. Something about his tone of voice made Jake look back over his shoulder. Sonny was holding a gun. "Okay," Jake said. "Let's not get all excited." "Just playing the odds," Sonny said. "You cheated Barada in Juarez, skipped out on Azimi in Hong Kong. They had it coming," Jake said. "Who wouldn't take the chance to cheat Tony Azimi? That guy was a scumbag." "And stole from me in my own backyard," Sonny added. That was a little harder to paper over. Jake had, in fact, pulled a job in Sonny's territory without telling Sonny about it or cutting him in. From Sonny's perspective, that was a problem. From Jake's perspective, it had been a chance to make a quick score and maybe establish his bona fides as someone who knew where to find the good stuff in the ruins of Southern California. Sonny must have at least partially bought into that because he was giving Jake a chance to make good by displaying those bona fides. "And now I'm stealing for you," Jake said. "Circle of life. We good?" "You deliver, and yeah, we're good." Sonny's expression didn't change. Jake tried to gauge whether or not he was telling the truth. It didn't really matter at the moment. His fingers found the emergency release lever behind the control panel. Jake grinned and pulled the release. A heavy thunk sounded from the door as its bolts disengaged. It opened with a low grinding noise. The Jaeger wasn't powered anymore, but the backup battery systems on the old Mark I models held their power for a long time. Jake stood and noticed that Sonny hadn't put the gun away. Not a good sign. But he put the best face on it, keeping up his grin and gesturing through the open door. "Let's get rich," he said. He went into the chamber first. These old Jaegers had big plasma chambers because PPDC techs hadn't been able to optimize the plasma density before they had to get the Jaegers into service. The space was the size of several rooms in his mansion. Cables and conduits ran along the walls, converging on a central spot where the plasma capacitor was located. Or should have been. Jake stopped in the middle of the room, unable to believe the bad luck. The capacitor shunt cables were still sparking, which meant that someone had gotten there within the last few minutes. Any longer and the residual energy would have all bled out already. "No, no, it says it's here," Jake said. He glanced down at his tracker, which still said the capacitor was right there in front of him. He turned towards Sonny. It should be right here. Sonny smashed him across the face with the butt of his gun. Jake went down, landing on hands and knees. Blood dripped off his chin from a cut high on his cheek. Somebody please kill this guy for me, Sonny said. His goons drew guns and leveled them at Jake. Wait, wait! Jake gave the tracker a smack. The screen flickered and went dark, then came back on again. Now it showed the capacitor on the move, but not too far away. Someone else is in here, he said, jumping up. Someone what? Sonny seemed to have forgotten about killing him for the moment. Jake scrambled over cable housings and big emplacements of dead machinery, aiming for an exit door halfway up the far wall. They have the capacitor, he said. Come on, the signal's close. Sonny and the goons came after him. Jake! Sonny shouted. Jake, you son of a— His voice was cut off as Jake pulled the release lever on the door and it slammed shut. Now all Jake had to do was keep track of the capacitor signal and get out of the Jaeger before Sonny's goons caught up with him. He ran through the maze of maintenance corridors inside Romeo Blue's torso, ducking into a tunnel lined with heavy power cables. Echoing through the Jaeger's interior, he could hear Sonny shouting. He wasn't sure he'd be able to beat them to one of the exits, but then again, maybe he didn't have to. A plan started to form in his head. Like most of his best plans, it was half-assed and risky. The cable tunnel split, and as Jake shoved some of the cables aside to make the turn, he came face to face with one of Sonny's goons. The goon was pretty fast, getting his gun up, but Jake was that much faster, laying the guy out with a single punch before he could pull the trigger. Before the goon had hit the ground, bullets tore into the cables around him. Sonny had found him. He scrambled into the side tunnel, which angled down steeply enough that it was easier to slide to the bottom. When his feet hit level ground again, he was in a shunt room, a dead end. He ran to the far end of it, turning to face the mouth of the tunnel as Sonny and his other men caught up. Nice try, Sonny said with a cruel grin. This time he apparently didn't want anyone else to shoot Jake because he raised his own gun. And that's when Jake's plan paid off. He kicked out and his booted foot hit a lever on the floor. It cranked over and a maintenance door sprang open under Sonny and the goons, dropping them into a hold under the floor. They landed hard and Jake kicked the lever again, slamming the door shut. Yeah, Jake said. We're good. Sometimes it paid to know odd details about old Jaegers. Then he took off running, following the signal on the tracker. He came out of Romeo Blue's torso at the shoulder joint, maybe 50 feet off the ground. Below, a figure in a hoodie was sprinting across the open ground toward a motorcycle, a backpack in one hand. The capacitor was in that backpack. Jake made a jump for a cable hanging down from a crane near Romeo Blue's head. He caught it and started to let himself down hand over hand. Then the mechanism let go and he was hanging on for dear life. It seized up again after he had dropped about 20 feet and his momentum jerked him loose. He fell the rest of the way to the roof of a shipping container on the ground, landing flat on his back. The impact knocked the wind out of him, but he rolled off the container and started after the thief again. The motorcycle revved up and the hooded figure skidded off in a spray of gravel. Jake started in pursuit, hoping he could maybe get over the fence and out the access road before the motorcycle went around through the open gate. But he heard engines and froze. PPD security vehicles tore past, following the motorcycle. Damn it, Jake thought. That's what happens when you fire guns in a Jaeger scrapyard. If the thief was caught, he'd never get the capacitor. If the thief got away, though. He looked down at the tracker. The signal was strong, and it was still moving. 2. For immediate release. Xiao announces drone initiative. Shanghai, 9th of June, 2034. Xiao Lian, founder and CEO of Xiao Industries, announced today that her company had secured funding from the Pan-Pacific Defense Corps to build a fleet of drone Jaegers based on prototypes created by Xiao and demonstrated at a PPDC Council closed session earlier this year. The potential impact on worldwide PPDC budget expenditures is significant, since current deployment models require the upkeep of shatter domes in every region of the Pacific Rim. Each shatter dome must be staffed with rangers and enormous support crews of technicians and engineers. Xiao envisions a new PPDC, with fewer shatter domes and smaller crews. Drone Jaegers would be operated remotely from a single central PPDC facility, eliminating the operational expense of Ranger team stations at every Shatter Dome. Further, drones would not require the installation of expensive con pods and drift cradles, reducing the unit cost of each Jaeger by as much as 15%. Another benefit is reduced risk to the lives of Rangers, who suffer a regrettable number of training accidents and drift-related maladies, even apart from the combat dangers risks when they face kaiju or other threats. If approved by the PPDC Council, the drone fleet will be ready for initial deployments and field testing within the next calendar year. By the time Jake got going after the capacitor thief, the signal was all the way across town, headed south. He followed, going all night until dawn found him in the southern part of Santa Monica, which was even more of a ruin than the area around the Jaeger graveyard. Before the kaiju war, he'd heard it was a nice place, but now it was a half-destroyed slum, full of people picking through the ruins to survive. The old pedestrian mall was now an open-air market, and farther south, the towering bones of the kaiju insurrector lay on the beach where it had fallen, after destroying much of the Santa Monica pier. Scavengers and black market entrepreneurs had stripped the body of everything from its blood to the parasites wriggling in the gaps under its armor plating. All of it was valuable, and most of it was lethal if the scavenger crews didn't take appropriate precautions. You could get dissolved by kaiju blood, infected by kaiju germs, suffocated when the decaying tissue trapped you inside their corpses. They decayed incredibly fast once exposed to the foreign atmosphere of Earth, and that was if other scavengers didn't jump you before you could get your goods to market. Jake had steered clear of the trade in kaiju parts, by and large. The sight of their monumental skeletons dotting the coasts filled him with sadness for what the kaiju had done to the world, and behind it a more distant sadness about his father. Jake missed the world he'd been born into. He wanted it back. Well, sometimes, anyway. Then there were the mornings when he got up and there was a sea breeze as the light of dawn crept along the tops of the bluffs falling toward the Pacific, and he just pulled off a score that was going to set him up for months. Then this world didn't seem so bad. If he was smart and a little bit lucky, he'd have one of those days tomorrow. After this point, it wouldn't stop the man from trying to kill him again, so Jake figured he might as well get something out of the capacitor. As dawn broke, Jake followed the tracker through the decaying ruins of Santa Monica, passing buildings tagged with the symbols of various kaiju cults. Kaiju worshippers clustered in ruins like this one to be closer to the bones of their gods. He passed beggars and people trying to sell worthless junk so they wouldn't be thought of as beggars. Ignoring them all, Jake followed the tracker signal. The plasma capacitor was somewhere on the other side of the pier. He had to climb the rubble of buildings destroyed years ago by Insurrector before he got a good look at where the thief had gone. There, on the other side of the pier, the PPDC had built a shipyard for support vessels and barges big enough to transport damaged or incomplete Jaegers. Now the whole thing was decommissioned and abandoned, had been for years. There were dry docks, hangars, huge old warehouses, all of them filled with squatters and lowlifes, including the thief who had his plasma capacitor. That capacitor had already caused Jake a lot of trouble, so he and the thief would have to reach an understanding. Actually, it would be better if he and the thief never met. If Jake was lucky, the thief was tired from the trip, and Jake could get into the shipyard, find the capacitor, and get back out without them ever knowing he was there. He started the long scramble down the bones and rubble, aiming for a warehouse at the water edge of the shipyard. The tracker said the capacitor was somewhere inside. He worked his way along the edge of the warehouse until the tracker said he was as close as he was going to get. Then Jake pried open the closest window, wincing at the creaking sound. He swung through and dropped into a room that maybe used to be an office or a break room. Now it was clear someone was squatting there. A dirty mattress in the corner, surrounded by food wrappers and other personal trash, told him that much. The rest of the floor was covered with bits of machinery and tools. Jake scanned the walls and knew he was in the right place. Whoever was living here had a serious obsession with kaiju and Jaegers. The walls were plastered with magazine pages, newspapers, printouts from online stories, all of it a chronicle of the kaiju war from the very beginning, the opening of the breach. A blurry photo of one of the old Mark II Jaegers was taped up next to it. Someone had written, "How big?" in silver Sharpie. The rest of that part of the wall was a gallery of shots of Jaegers and kaiju with other notes. Then the wall's focus shifted to Shaolin, a one-time computer prodigy who now ran a multi-billion dollar company, Shao Industries. She'd been a pioneer in several different aspects of Jaeger design, and the most recent headline suggested she still was. Shao Industries, the future of Jaeger tech. Jake wouldn't know. He'd been out of touch with that world for a long time. Scanning down the wall, he stopped when he saw a faded Time magazine cover portrait of Raleigh Beckett. The only words were Raleigh's name and his dates, 1998 to 2026. Seeing that hit Jake hard. Raleigh had been one of his idols when he was a kid, and Raleigh was the young loose cannon. He had served under Jake's father. Then he had been the hero of the Battle of the Breach, surviving the mission that had taken Stacker Pentecost. Jake had a lot of complicated feelings about them that he'd spent the last 10 years ignoring, so he wasn't going to start now. He moved on, toward the door at the far end of the room. So far, he hadn't heard a sound other than his own quiet footsteps. On the other side of the door was the main floor of the warehouse, acres of concrete with a roof maybe 50 feet high. And in the middle of that expanse stood a homemade Jaeger. Not full-sized, but its head was close to the ceiling. For a moment Jake stood, amazed at the sight. Someone in the midst of all this chaos and misery had built a Jaeger out of spare parts. It was ugly, cobbled together from mismatched junk, including some scavenged armor plating Jake recognized as coming from a Mark II. But others could have started their service life in any machine from a water pump to a blast furnace. The overall effect was strange compared to a full-sized Jaeger. This one was maybe 40 feet tall, with no room inside its head for a con pod, but the designer had given it two lights there, like eyeballs. Jake remembered an old engineer telling him people always wanted to humanize machines, even if it didn't make design sense, because somewhere deep down inside they thought of machines as their children. Jake wasn't sure how seriously to take that idea, but he'd been remembering it for a long time, so it must have meant something to him. The con pod, or what passed for one, in this little Jaeger was set into its torso. Armored window frames gave pilots and passengers a view of the world beyond their wannabe Jaeger creation. One of its hands was a three-fingered pincer, and the other arm ended in a... Jake wasn't sure what it was in the gloom. Some kind of saw blade. Whoever had put this thing together was a seriously gifted tinker. And now it occurred to Jake he was in the presence of a truly great score. The plasma capacitor he'd been after was plugged into a hatch in the mini Jaeger's ankle, but Jake was already thinking bigger. People were always trying to build Jaegers to make some kind of personal statement, but not too many people could actually do it. This thief had pulled it off, and by the look of it, there wasn't a big gang involved. They wouldn't have let something this valuable sit around without security. But whoever had built it, well, they must not have understood how the real world worked, because there it was. Who did Jake know with enough assets and ego to pay for a functioning personal Jaeger? He felt movement in the room, behind him. Instinctively, Jake skipped to the side and turned toward the person coming at him. He saw a length of pipe swinging toward his head and caught it. The assailant was wiry, but small. Jake wrenched the pipe loose and in the same motion slammed the thief down to the floor. He'd learned a long time ago that when a fight started, you didn't let it end until you were sure the other guy wasn't going to get up again, so he raised the pipe and then froze in mid-swing. The figure on the floor was wearing dirty jeans and a hoodie. Impact with the floor had pushed the hoodie back far enough for Jake to see that the thief was a young teenager, and also a girl.
"What? How old are you?"
he asked, still holding the pipe. She sat up and pulled the hood the rest of the way off. Dark hair, a face that in other times would have led the homecoming parade. But those eyes, they were all grown up, tough and smart and angry.
"Old enough to kick your ass,"
she said and started to get up. Jake planted the pipe in her shoulder and nudged her back to the floor.
"Let's take a minute,"
he said. Cocking his head back toward the mini Jaeger, he asked,
"You build this thing yourself?" "What do you think?"
she snapped.
"I think I could sell your little toy for a whole lot of money."
"Scrapper's not a toy," the girl said, "and she's not for sale." Scrapper, Jake thought. Good name. Evocative of both attitude and origin. You had to admire the resolve, but this was business. "The man holding the pipe says she is, so..." Sirens sounded from outside the warehouse. The girl looked toward the main hangar doors at the far end of the room.
"You let them here?"
"What?" Jake was offended at being called out by a little runt squatting in the Santa Monica slum.
"Nobody follows me, it must have been you."
He glanced over his shoulder in the direction of the sirens, and the girl seized her chance. She kicked the pipe out of his hands and rolled to her feet, scrambling away across the floor toward the mini-Ager.
Hey!
Jake started to go after her, but he was almost certain that would end up with him arrested in the back of a PPDC van. She kicked the capacitor hatch closed and scrambled up Scrapper's leg to the con pod and its torso. She powered it up as she got settled in a gyroscopic cradle.
Yes, it works.
Wait, Jake thought. Is this the first time she's used this thing? The sirens were closer, and there were a lot of them. Jake took another look at Scrapper's con pod. There was room for two, and if it worked, it worked. He headed for the mini-Ager and hauled himself up just as she had, diving in next to her just as she slammed Scrapper's chest plate shut.
Hey, she shouted. Get out!
Jake turned around in the tight compartment.
Where's the other one?
The other what? Busy powering up various subroutines, the girl wasn't looking at him.
The other cradle! Jaegers need two pilots!
Scrapper's small enough to run on a single neural load, she said proudly.
Then move over and let me pilot!
Screw that! Then she punched a final command, and Scrapper's power gauges surged to max readings. The little Jaeger charged forward, smashing through the warehouse wall. Sheet metal and broken glass scattered over the pavement in a parking lot full of PPD security vehicles. Scrapper kicked them aside, sending PPDC personnel scattering.
Woohoo!
She cheered, like she was having the time of her life.
Told you she's not a toy! You're gonna get us killed, now come on!
Jake started trying to uncouple her from the gyroscope so he could take her place in the cradle. She couldn't have known this, but he knew his way around a con pod.
Stop it. I can get us out of here. I just got us out. Get off. Hey!
They stopped struggling as a huge bogey appeared on Scrapper's HUD. It wasn't as fancy as a full-scale Jaeger's heads-up display, but it was a pretty slick piece of work for a teenager working with scraps. She skidded Scrapper to a halt, throwing Jake to the floor.
Oh my God.
She said as they got a visual. Straight in front of them was a huge Mark VI Jaeger, one of the newest in the fleet. Steely gray with black accents and a blue tinge to its exterior running lights, it looked every bit the part of the law enforcement Jaeger, which it was. Jake recognized it. So did she.
That's November Ajax!
A moment before, Jake had been trying to get her away from the controls, but now there wasn't time. November Ajax was the PPD's designated patrol Jaeger for the whole of the devastated area from Santa Monica down through Long Beach. Occasionally, it was called into service to handle social unrest, but the PPDC typically didn't send November Ajax out unless there had been an attack on a PPDC installation or a theft of PPDC property. This meant the PPDC had tracked the theft of the plasma capacitor just as Jake had, and decided it warranted a full response. If they were caught, there would be serious consequences. They'd use them as examples to other would-be thieves, and put them away for a long time.
You're gonna get us nicked, Jake said, his voice tight. Keep moving!
Pilots of unregistered Jaeger,
the voice boomed from November Ajax's external speakers, shaking the two of them in Scrapper's small con pod.
This is the Pan-Pacific Defense Corps. Power down and exit your con pod.
The girl raised her hands.
That's it?
Jake was disappointed.
You give up way too easy, kid.
That's what they think, the girl said. She clenched her fists and smoke canisters shot out of sockets in Scrapper's arms. Clouds billowed around November Ajax's legs hiding Scrapper, who shot between the larger Jaeger's legs and barreled down the street. Jake got a grip on one of the cables connecting the conpod capsule to the counterweights inside Scrapper's torso. They were there to deaden momentum shifts and prevent the pilot from getting knocked around when Scrapper made sudden movements. A primitive solution, but a workable one. As long as you were in the gyro cradle. Jake wasn't, so just had to take his lumps and hang on for dear life.
Hang on!
She yelled as November Ajax turned and caught up to them with one long stride.
I am hanging on! Hang tighter!
She was working her command array, and she punched a final command. The next thing Jake knew, he was upside down, then right side up again, then rolling over and over and bouncing hard off the inside wall of the con pod. Scrapper had apparently curled into a ball and was rolling in tight figure eights around November Ajax's feet. The girl stayed upright and level the whole time. Jake had to hand it to her. She'd done the cradle design just right. But Jake slammed around until he got himself jammed into one of the counterweight alcoves. It wasn't a dignified solution, but it would keep him from getting knocked out or breaking an arm while they escaped November Ajax. If they escaped November Ajax.
November Ajax swiped down at Scrapper, but the girl had seen it coming. She ducked her body to one side, and Scrapper careened that way, crashing off palm trees and over burned-out cars. She rolled Scrapper fast up a high pile of rubble, and it came crashing down through the wall of a partially collapsed building. For a moment, everything was silent except the sound of debris shifting around them. Jake started to get himself back together now that he knew which way was up again. "See?" the girl said triumphantly. "I just out-piloted November Ajax." Jake shook his head. "You didn't." "Did?" she insisted. With a huge rumble, November Ajax tore away one wall of the building Scrapper was hiding in. "Didn't," Jake said. The girl froze. He could see she wasn't sure what to do next. "Okay, what do you got? And I'm not getting out." This was a point where it paid to have plans go wrong all the time, Jake thought. It meant you were always ready to come up with a new one on the fly. He glanced around the con pod, figuring there must be something in there he could use. To do what, he didn't know, but Jake was an optimist, at least when it came to his ability to get out of tight situations. He'd find something. There. He pointed at a pair of ion cells set into the con pod's wall. "One of these ion cells redundant?" The girl frowned. "No?" Jake figured Scrapper could run for a little while without it. Ion cells usually weren't mission-critical, since they were normally wired to different yields than the plasma capacitors that powered the mainframe and systems. They handled things like reserve power, backup systems. In other words, things you didn't really worry about when November Ajax was chasing you down. He primed the subroutine that would eject one of the ion cells. The eject chute was on the outer hull. Cells were typically only ejected when their power reserves were exhausted. There was a reason for that, as November Ajax's pilots were about to find out. "Is now," he said. "Get as close to Ajax's head. Go!" She was steamed, but she did it. The girl gunned Scrapper forward and climbed straight up November Ajax's arm, which was maybe three times as long as Scrapper was tall. The minute they got level with the Jaeger's head, Jake hit the eject button. "Go, go!" he shouted. Scrapper leaped away from November Ajax. Jake was not looking forward to the 200-foot drop, but the girl piloting Scrapper was ahead of him. She aimed for the roof of a building across the street. It looked like it might once have been a bank. Behind them, the ion cell clanged off November Ajax's head and ruptured, releasing a blast of ionized energy that crackled around the Jaeger's head and upper torso like a localized lightning storm. November Ajax staggered as the surge disrupted its systems. They landed on the roof, with Jake craning to get a look at the drunk-looking swang of November Ajax. He wanted to gloat over the success of his plan a little, but all he caught was a glimpse before Scrapper's weight caved in the roof and they were falling through the shattered interior floors toward the ground level. When they hit, the pilot was still smooth and cool. But it took Jake a minute to get his breath and focus his eyes after the jarring impact. She was looking at him. He could see the surprise on her face even though she was trying to play things cool and hide it. She wanted to know how he knew that would work. But she wouldn't ask, and Jake wasn't going to tell her. She saw that in his eyes, or perhaps he was imagining it. In any case, she charged forward, and Scrapper plowed through the rubble around the bottom of the building out into the street. A warning flashed on the con-pod HUD. Reserve power at 12%.
"Told you we needed that," she yelled. "It worked, didn't it?" he yelled back.
"How long before Ajax can reboot his systems?" Jake thought it was interesting that she thought he would know. Maybe she'd figured out by now that he knew a little about Jaegers. He also admired her cool for wanting to be sure how much of a head start she could expect before the Jaeger was back in action. Before he could figure out what to say, November Ajax's enormous foot slammed down in front of them, kicking up a huge blast of sand and bits of concrete.
"About that long," Jake said.
"Power down and exit your con pod," November Ajax's pilot boomed. "This is your final warning." Jake was surprised when the girl spun Scrapper around and ran off. She had more guts than he'd figured, to do that on 12% reserve power with no chance of actually getting away. Their dash for freedom didn't go on for long. November Ajax raised one fist and fired a set of grappling hooks, trailing cables across the empty space. They clamped onto Scrapper's fuselage, and as soon as they had attached, an electric pulse surged through the cables. Inside Scrapper's con pod, Jake felt his hair standing up. Circuits were sparking and smoking all over, including the suite of scavenged electronics controlling the gyroscopic cradle. It jammed as the con pod went dark. The only light was what filtered through Scrapper's visor and down from its head into the torso. Slowly, Scrapper tipped over backward and crashed to the ground, leaving Jake bruised again and the pilot hung up on her back in the cradle. She looked mad.
Jake couldn't decide whether that was to cover fear, or whether she was just really feeling more anger than anything else. People fronted all kinds of stuff when they were about to go down for serious crimes. A series of heavy thumps sounded in the confined space. November Ajax was tapping on Scrapper's hull. Jake looked at the girl and shrugged. They'd made a good run, did themselves proud, but they weren't ever going to get anywhere against a full-sized Jaeger. He levered the hatch open and climbed out, raising his hands. The girl followed him, looked up at November Ajax, and screamed, "Look what you did to my Jaeger, you dick!" 3. Illegal Jaeger workshop broken up in Santa Monica. L.A. World staff. Working in coordination with local law enforcement, a Pan-Pacific Defense Corps security detail located a black market Jaeger workshop in the former PPDC cargo facility located on the Santa Monica waterfront. The area, devastated by a kaiju attack near the end of the Kaiju War, has suffered from high crime and mass outmigration in the year since the closing of the breach. More recently, according to PPDC staffers, it has become a hotbed of illegal trade in Jaeger parts and other related technological components. The workshop in question contained one completed Jaeger approximately 40 feet in height, as well as hundreds of parts that PPDC and local forensic technicians are still cataloging. It is believed that the homemade Jaeger in the workshop may have ties to the underground mech racing circuits that have gained popularity within the criminal underworld of the Santa Monica slums. Officials cannot confirm or deny this at this time. The suspects attempted to escape in the Jaeger and damaged several PPDC vehicles before being apprehended by November Ajax, the PPD's designated patrol Jaeger for the Southern California region. PPD staff would not confirm reports that November Ajax was damaged during the struggle. The names of those arrested are being withheld pending confirmation of their identities. Jake held it in as long as he could, through the ride in the back of the van to PPDC to the regional HQ where they were processed into a holding cell. But eventually he couldn't keep it in any longer. "Should've let me pilot," he said. "Like this is my fault?" Amara snapped back. "You just learned her name when she gave it to the security officer who booked them. You compromised my command center." "Command center?" That term was a little more elevated than Scrapper's makeshift conpa deserved, Jake thought. He shook his head and looked away, trying not to laugh. "I'm not talking to you." She didn't say anything. Jake sat, trying not to look at her or say anything either. But in the end, he couldn't help himself. He had to know. "Why'd you build it? What happened to the not talking?" She glanced over at him long enough to register his displeasure, then looked back at the doors, as if she was planning her risky escape. "You said you weren't going to sell it, so what, rob a bank or something?" Jake had heard of that. It was a good way to have your robbery caper end with a missile strike instead of police sirens, but some people like to go out that way. Amara had a faraway look in her eyes as she remembered something, and it took her a moment to speak. "I built it because one day they're going to come back," she said, all her bravado melting away. "The kaiju. And when they do, I'm not going to be stuck waiting for someone else to come save my ass. Not like before." Jake absorbed that. It wasn't what he'd expected. She was different when she let the tough facade slip for a moment. He didn't have more time to consider that, though, because PPDC officers were at the moment opening the cell. "Ew," one of them said to Jake. "Let's go." Hollow emitters on different sides of the interrogation room flickered to life, and a hologram appeared. Ah, Jake thought, the old remote interrogation. Usually they got started that way, then brought a real cop into the room and they thought you needed to be scared a little. Not that Jake had spent a lot of time talking to cops over the past few years. The hologram took a moment to resolve, and then Jake found himself looking at the last person in the world he'd have expected to see at that moment. Mako Mori. She looked great in her PPDC Secretary General's uniform. After she'd survived the closing of the breach, she'd risen through the ranks fast, eventually surpassing her father. Well, their father, to become head of the PPDC. "There she is," Jake said brightly. He was happy to see her. He also hoped she might help him get out of this jam. "My sister from another mister. You make some calls, pull some strings. I gotta sign some paperwork." She didn't answer him right away, and when she did, the air went right out of his initial exuberance. I was really hoping to not see you like this again.
Just a stretch of bad luck, Jake said, feeling a little abashed. I'll figure it out.
She wasn't buying it. Father used to say we make our own luck.
That was the wrong approach to take with Jake, bringing up their father. Last thing in the world he wanted to talk about.
Yeah, Dad said a lot of things. He was being flippant to get a rise out of her, but it didn't work. Maybe she was too grown up for that now.
You were in a rogue Jaeger with stolen PPDC tech.
Wasn't mine.
You have priors. This is serious, Jake.
Jake's charming act faded a little. Was he in real trouble here, even though his sister ran the PPDC?
Which is why I need my big sister to get me the hell out of here, he prompted.
They're not going to let you just walk out, she said. But there may be another way.
Great, Levitt, what do I gotta do?
Re-enlist, she answered without missing a beat. And finish what you started.
That wasn't what Jake had expected. He couldn't help it. He laughed at how ridiculous the idea was.
I'm a little old to be a cadet, Mako.
I don't want you to be a cadet. I want you to help train them.
Train them? Jake had barely gone past the cadet stage himself. How could he train anyone in anything?
What's behind door number two?
He asked. She ignored the question like she always did when she'd made up her mind.
The transport is standing by to bring both of you to Moyolin.
Moyolin. The big shatter dome. China. She was serious.
But both of us?
You and your new recruit, she said.
Enjoy your flight, Jake.
Mako?
Mako.
She broke the connection and the hologram disappeared.
Son of a...
Jake was all by himself again. 4. Memorial service disrupted by kaiju cultists. From Wire Reports. Agitators from several kaiju-worshipping sects disrupted a ceremonial dedication of a memorial to siblings Stacker and Luna Pentecost in their home city of London. The long-planned memorial, delayed by conflict over its sitting and design, was approved after years of wrangling for a corner of Bruce Castle Park near White Hart Lane in the Tottenham neighborhood where the Pentecost siblings were born. Luna Pentecost, a pilot with the Royal Air Force, was killed in the first battle of the Kaiju War when the creature later dubbed Trespasser came ashore in San Francisco Bay. RAF support elements assisted the American Air Force, and both suffered heavy losses. She was posthumously awarded the Victoria Cross. Stacker Pentecost, also initially an RAF pilot, later became one of the founding Rangers in the fledgling Jaeger program, and piloted the Jaeger Coyote Tango on a number of missions, including the famous encounter with the Kaiju Onibaba in Tokyo, during which Pentecost saved the life of current PPDC Secretary General Mako Mori. Sickened by radiation from Coyote Tango's poorly designed reactor, Stacker moved into PPDC oversight, becoming Marshal. His final mission, to close the breach in March 2025, was successful, but at the cost of his life and that of his co-pilot, Chuck Hansen. Police quickly broke up the demonstration and the memorial dedication proceeded without incident. The Metropolitan Police declined to say how many arrests they had made or characterized the amount of property damage. By sunset, the PPDC transport carrier had crossed the Pacific Ocean, bringing the Moyolin Shatter Dome into view. Jake took it in with what might charitably be called mixed feelings. He'd seen shatter domes before, and his memories of them were not all positive. Moyolin was a newer location, built in the round of consolidations and relocations following the end of the Kaiju War. It occupied the largest of a group of mountainous islands in Tsinghuan Bay, about 400 kilometers south of Shanghai. The main shatter dome, containing the Jaeger Bay and mechanical operations, was at the center of the complex. To the left as they approached was the main body of the base, a bunker-style complex 8 to 10 stories tall and hundreds of yards long, reaching from the shatter dome out to a large parking area for jump-hawks, V-dragons, and the transport helicopters that made up the bulk of the PPDC's aerial fleet. The jump-hawks looked much like they had when Jake was around shatter domes before, massive helicopters designed to carry Jaegers from shatter domes to field deployments more quickly than the Jaegers could get there themselves. The V-Dragons were different and newer.
The V in their designation referred to the rotating engine mounts that gave them vertical takeoff and landing capability, or VTOL for short. Curving from the fleet parking area across the front of the Shatterdome was a broad tarmac with hydraulic lifts at its waterfront side. Jaegers rode those down into the water for local deployments and training exercises in the relatively shallow waters around the islands. Each elevator platform was a rectangle roughly 40 by 30 yards in size, giving a Jaeger plenty of room to stand clear of the deck as the platform descended toward the water level. Beyond the elevator platforms, on the far side of the installation from the Jumphawk parking, the tarmac narrowed and curved into a long arm, supported over the water by immense steel-reinforced concrete pilings. Here were four external staging gantries, where Jaeger stood while they were linked to Jumphawks for deployment. Elevators ran up the interior of the gantries, which were made of heavy girders. At the side of each gantry stood a control tower, staffed by J-Tech supervisors, tasked with making final readiness checks once the Rangers were inside each Jaeger, and it was powering up for action. The exterior tarmac area was bustling with activity. Tech crews ran refueling hoses onto waiting Jumphawk transports, while other crews ran carts of supplies and machinery to various destinations in the complex. Everything was tightly controlled and perfectly synchronized, thanks to the crew's superb training. Jake remembered the scene from his previous life as a cadet. He'd been amazed then at how such a giant facility could run so smoothly, and he felt some of that amazement again now. The carrier came in low past a stand of old rocket thrusters in a row at the edge of the tarmac. When it landed, Jake and Amara stepped out, duffel bags slung over their shoulders. They'd already been issued gear back in California. Amara was nervous and showed it by talking non-stop. She'd commented on the size of the transport, the size of the Shatterdome, the size of the Pacific Ocean, and now that they were on the ground, she finally got to what was really on her mind. Why me? I mean, why do they want me for the program? Jake didn't know for sure, but he could guess. Built and piloted your own Jaeger, he said. Don't see that every day. As if he'd conjured it, Scrapper came to view right then, suspended between two Jumphawks. They'd followed the personnel transport across the Pacific, but this was the first time Amara had been able to lay eyes on her creation since November Ajax disabled it back in Santa Monica. The Jumphawks hovered low over the tarmac and released the cables holding Scrapper. The little Jaeger dropped and landed solidly on its feet, then tottered and fell face down with a loud crash.
Hey!
Amara protested as crews ran to reattach cables so the Jumphawks could set Scrapper on its feet again.
Be careful with Scrapper!
Jake was about to tell her it would be all right, since the Shatterdome techs would be doing a complete refit of Scrapper the minute they got the little Jaeger into a hangar gantry. But he didn't have the chance, because an old familiar voice cut through the din of Jumphawk rotors and shouting techs. Will you look at this? The voice belonged to Ranger Nathan Lambert, the strapping, square-jawed poster boy for the Ranger service, and once upon a time, Jake's partner. He was wearing a military tank top, managing to walk with a swagger that made his dog tags jingle, even though he carried a heavy gear assembly in both hands. Didn't believe it when they told me you were inbound, he said, addressing Jake. Nate, Jake nodded, this is Cadet Amara Namani. You'll address me as Ranger Lambert. Nate interrupted. Jake paused. You having a laugh? This is a military base, Lambert said, dead serious. Remember how those work, Ranger Pentecost? Turning to Amara, he lightened up a little. Welcome to the Shatterdome. This is where you learn how to save the world. He strode off toward the open bay doors that led into the Shatterdome. Jake followed, Amara right next to him.
Did that haircut just call you Pentecost? She asked incredulously.
As in Badass Stacker Pentecost, pilot of Coyote Tango, hero of... It's just a name, Jake said. He was still stewing over Nate's snub. Clearly, Nate was holding a grudge about how Jake had left the Ranger program. But that was Nate's problem. The only way it would be Jake's problem was if Nate couldn't let it go.
A really cool name,
Amara said, looking at Jake in a whole new way. Jake didn't like it. He didn't want her to admire him. He didn't want anyone to admire him.
Explains why you got a golden ticket, Amara added.
This got under Jake's skin. He didn't see any golden ticket. He saw a one-way ticket back into a life he tried his best to get away from.
You know, moving forward, let's limit the conversation, okay? He could feel her eyes on him as they followed Lambert through the 30-story tall, ocean-facing hangar doors that led into the Shatterdome's Jaeger Bay. Amara forgot all about Jake and goggled at the sight. Just inside the door, Valor Omega was docking into her service cradle. Jake took a long look at her, remembering his own training, when most of these Jaegers were either still under construction or completing their pre-deployment final technical screenings. Valor Omega was all about firepower, her whole torso designed around massive arms and shoulders, ending in forearm-mounted energy cannons. Orange and yellow against a black layer of ballistic under armor, she made Jake think of fire. Looking around the vast bay, he saw the rest of Moyolin's complement of Jaegers. There was heavy, broad-shouldered Titan Redeemer, her left arm ending in the massive Morningstar hand she could lash out on the end of a charged cable. Nearly 60 feet in diameter, the Morningstar had a super-dense liquid metal core that gave it extra punching power, especially when it was fired from its emplacement on the cable. Testing simulations indicated it would put a Cat 2 Kaiju down with a single shot. The hundreds of spikes on the Morningstar lay flat when it was inert, but flared out when it was deployed, adding damage to the outer armored layers of any target. Titan blended into the shadows falling near her service cradle, her olive coloring acting as camouflage. Guardian Bravo, by contrast, was a brilliant red and silver, her graphene arc whip retracted while it was at rest. Other than her color scheme, Guardian Bravo was set apart from the rest of the Shatterdome's complement by the tall vent stacks that stood up from the backs of its shoulders. Jake hadn't learned much about Guardian Bravo's design, but he thought he remembered the stacks having something to do with creating a static charge, using internal fans to generate extra power to the arc whip. In demonstrations, the whip had proven capable of cutting through a meter of steel, while delivering an electrical charge roughly comparable to an average lightning strike. Saber Athena, on the other side of the bay, was built much leaner and smaller. She was the PPD's most up-to-date effort to design a Jaeger that could potentially match a living creature's speed and quickness. All of the Mark VI Jaegers were faster on their feet than the previous generations, just due to improvements in neurotransmitting systems, in parallel with more sophisticated hydraulic damping that allowed for better lateral movement. Compared to the Mark II or Mark III Jaegers, the Mark VIs all looked like acrobats. But Saber Athena made the rest of them look slow. Her weaponry, twin plasma swords, was designed to work with her quick strike capability. She didn't have a ton of firepower, but her pilots trained to hit a target 5 times, while another one of the Mark VIs was still winding up for a second shot. Next was Bracer Phoenix, an experimental Mark VI with a 3-ranger con pod designed so that one of the pilots could drop down into the secondary control room and handle Bracer's devastating railgun. It was mounted on a track encircling Bracer's midsection, with a fire rate of hundreds of rounds per minute. Each shell was the size of a truck. Another of Bracer's innovations was a twin knee joint, segmented to flex both forward and backward. This advance enabled the Jaeger to hold her balance and keep moving even while the railgun was firing, as the extra joint in each leg gave it more recoil absorption, without sacrificing much in the way of strength or stability. Bracer had just been an idea on a drawing board when Jake left the PPDC. A 3-ranger crew was considered extravagant during the Kaiju War, when rangers were at a premium. But now, in the post-war era, the PPDC was freer to develop different piloting protocols. Finally, Jake's eye fell on Gypsy Avenger, the Mark VI successor to Gypsy Danger. Jake could see the family resemblance in the shape of the head and the detailing of the exterior armor, not to mention the blue-accented color scheme. He had once been assigned a Gypsy Avenger, and seeing her again churned up a lot of feelings that he would rather have left alone under their layers of time and deliberate forgetting. Gypsy was a good ride, strong and quick. She had a forearm-mounted chainsword on the left side, and her right arm contained the apparatus for the experimental gravity sling, a weapon Jake had barely started training on when... Well, he didn't want to think about that right now. He might be back in a Shatterdome, but that didn't mean he had to dredge up everything in his past. Seeing Nate Lambert so soon after the uncomfortable reunion with Mako had shaken him. Lambert scorned him and Mako pitied him. Jake felt worse about Mako's pity than Nate's scorn, but where Nate had made clear he didn't want Jake around, Mako was giving him a second chance. Jake knew how generous that was, even though it was a chance he would never have asked for, and wasn't sure he even wanted. Still, he was here. And the alternative was jail, so he was going to see which way the wind was blowing, and then get the hell out as soon as the chance presented itself. They were about halfway across the Jaegerbang, weaving to avoid JTAC crews crisscrossing the deck in scramblers or on foot. Amara fell behind, lost in her astonishment. Jake remembered feeling the same way about Jaegers. Now he was more cynical. Sooner or later, he figured she would be too. All signs in the Shatterdome were in both Mandarin and English, and most of the text spoke Mandarin, too. The PBDC had been an international effort from its inception, since the Kaiju had known no national boundaries. Now it retained its international character, because no nation on Earth could handle the costs alone while they tried to rebuild from the widespread devastation of the Kaiju War. "Some training starts at 0600, Lambert said, snapping Amara out of a reverie. "You're late, you missed the day. Fall behind, you're on a transport back to wherever they found you." Amara finally found her voice.
"That's Titan Redeemer, and Bracer Phoenix, she's a three-man rig, and Guardian Bravo, and Saber Athena. I love Saber Athena. She's the fastest Jaeger in the fleet."
Now Jake understood the posters plastering the walls of her squat back in Santa Monica. She adored Jaegers the way other kids worshipped musicians or YouTube stars. Jake, for his part, was curious why the whole Shatterdome seemed to be on alert. "What's all the hustle for?" he asked Nate. "In order to put on a show. Xiao and her team are coming in tomorrow."
"Xiao?" Amara echoed. "Like Xiao Lian?"
Again, Jake remembered her squat with its mini-shrine to Xiao. This was a perfect place for Amara, he thought. There was nowhere else in the world where she would have a better chance to show her stuff. "What'd they tell me?" Lambert said, like it was no big deal. But to Amara, it was a very big deal.
"Oh my God, Xiao Lian!" She spun to Jake. "You know who that is? PhD at 17, gazillionaire way before she was as old as you are."
"Yeah," Jake said. "I've heard of her, thanks."
"Half the tech and scrapper came from old Xiao parts."
Amara gazed up at the Jaeger surrounding them.
"Can't believe I'm going to get to meet her."
"You're not," Lambert said, glancing over at her.
"What?"
Amara looked stricken.
"Why?"
"Why do you think you're a cadet?"
"That's not fair."
"Get used to it around here," Jake commented. Ranger training was a lot of things, but fair wasn't one of them. Amara snorted and turned back to the Jaegers. Jake could see what this meant to her. For a girl who grew up idolizing Rangers and the Jaegers they piloted, being in a Shatterdome was a dream come true. He wished he could still feel that.
"So which one's yours?"
she asked Lambert. "Gypsy," Lambert said. He pointed up.
"You pilot Gypsy Avenger?"
Amara was looking at Lambert in a whole new way now. Gypsy Danger, the Jaeger Avenger was built from, was a legend. Gypsy had sealed the breach, surviving the Kaiju's final onslaught, even though it was one of the older Jaegers still in the field. It had been Raleigh Beckett's ride, and Makomori's. It was a name to conjure with.
"He used to,"
said a woman pulling up in a JTAC scrambler, a small vehicle designed for hauling heavy loads, until his co-pilot got a better offer in the private sector. She climbed off the scrambler and introduced herself.
"Hi, Jules Reyes, JTAC. Amara, cadet."
"Jake. Ranger, I guess." He looked her over. Dark hair and eyes, no-nonsense attitude to go with looks that would turn heads in the street. Jake was a sucker for the combination of competence and beauty. Jules Reyes radiated both. She eyed him right back.
"Heard a lot about you, Pentecost. You know you still hold the record."
That piqued Amara's interest.
"What record?"
"Told you to stop talking to me," Jake said. It was rude, and he knew it. He saw Lambert tighten up at the tone of his voice, but Jake didn't care. The last thing he wanted to do was rehash all the old stories from the last time he'd been in a Shatterdome. Jules took it all in and then went on like she hadn't seen anything.
"How'd they lure you back? Couldn't have been the pay."
"Long story," Jake said, "if you'd like to hear it sometime." "She wouldn't," Lambert interrupted. He handed Jules the part he'd been holding. "This what you were looking for?"
"Yeah."
She grinned and loaded it onto the scrambler.
"Outstanding."
Lambert was grinning back. Jake could see the spark between them. That explained why Lambert had been so quick to cut him off. "I'll swing by after I'm done with these two and give you a hand," Lambert said. Near one of the doors that led into the JTAC wing of the Shatterdome, a series of clattering bangs echoed through the huge space. Jake turned to see a scientist, lab coat, glasses, awkward demeanor, stumbling away from a bunch of stacked canisters he had just knocked over. They bounced around on the floor near another scrambler. The driver was shouting at him in Mandarin. Jake recognized the scientist, Airman Gottlieb, one of the pair who had unlocked the secret of the kaiju's creators, known as the Precursors, another legend in the history of the PPDC. Right now, he was stuttering.